I'm Pastor Brent Armstrong. I pastor Tucson Baptist Temple in Tucson, Arizona. I just started my 7th year last Sunday, and so it's really exciting to see all that the Lord is doing. I served at Oakwood Baptist Church in Anderson, South Carolina, just shy of 10 years. That church was 106 years old, and then Tucson Baptist was 51 years old when I became the pastor, so two established churches. I'm going to use all of my illustrations from my current ministry for the sake of time. The same, if I talked about Oakwood, the similarities would be uncanny how similar, but I'll just use Tucson. When I became the pastor of Tucson Baptist Temple, the church was in a serious decline. Adrian Reed, he's in a session here. He was serving there as a music pastor, trying to uphold the hands of the pastor there who had been there 50 years. He started the church, and his desire was to make it till he was 50 years of ministry and retire. And I have personally talked with Pastor Johnson. He's a great man, but by his own admission, he said, Brent, he said, I should have retired 10 years sooner than I did. He retired at 88. And those last 10 years of his ministry were very difficult on the church. The church actually, in 1979, had 2,000 people. And every Sunday was running anywhere from 1,700 to 1,800. They were running 55 to 60 buses. And in the heyday of the church, they were really reaching Tucson. There was New Testament Baptist Church, Tucson Baptist Temple. And both churches were really turning Tucson upside down. They were doing a great job. But the church went through a very serious decline. And so when I became pastor, there on Installation Sunday, there were 277 people on Installation Sunday. So that's from 1979, 2,000 people. 2009, the church had 277 people when the Sunday I was installed. And the church, you know, they made a big deal about it. It was exciting to be there. But there were some great challenges facing us. Pastor Johnson, he had allowed Sunday school teachers to begin to use whatever version of the Bible they wanted. And so there were four different versions of the Bible being used in Sunday school. The youth department had been sort of separated. Pastor Johnson, he was 88, and so there were things going on. And the youth department wasn't even attending church. In fact, Adrian wouldn't even allow his own son to go to youth, the youth department. It was kind of an awkward situation. They had their praise and worship band that they worshiped during service. So in meeting with the pulpit committee, they asked several questions, what changes would you make when you came in? And I said, well, wisdom would say I would wait just a little bit and see what's going on in the church, except for two things. I said, we will use the King James Version, so we won't be using any other version of the Bible in Sunday school. And the drum set will be gone the second Sunday I'm there. Outside of that, that's the only two immediate changes I'll make the first Sunday, and then we'll grow with it. And so that's happened. Only the drum set was gone before the first Sunday. It went to somebody's house, I think. So anyway, but so I give you that testimony that there were some real challenges going into Tucson Baptist Temple. And so I'd like for you to look at a verse, just a springboard, and then we'll open in a word of prayer. And that verse is in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, a very familiar verse. We've actually already heard it quoted in our messages today and yesterday. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse number 9. For we are laborers, I love that next word, together. We're laborers together. We're laboring with God. We're trying to accomplish His purpose in our communities. And so with that thought in mind, let's open this session with a word of prayer. Father in heaven, I pray over the next hour that you just help us to be able to share some practical advice that we found useful and helpful. And I pray that you will use this session to at least one idea to help a pastor to take back and be able to use in his ministry. In Jesus' name, amen. I am not an expert at anything, but the Lord has allowed me in my last two pastorates, 18 years of pastoring, to take two established ministries and with His power, His blessing, to have ministries renewed. I'm not going to preach to you, but what I am going to do is it's a workshop. I'm just going to give you some ideas, some steps that we've done in two ministries that have worked and we've seen churches grow. I told you on Installation Sunday, we had 277. Easter Sunday this year, 6 years later, we had 1,186. So in 6 years, that's what's happened at Tucson Baptist Temple. Now, we're not running 1,186. That was a special Sunday. We're running right at 800 right now. We've actually had saved, baptized. We've seen new membership. We've had 668 people join our church since I became pastor. And how have we done that? How's all that happened? How has this ministry been renewed over a six-year period? I'd just like to give you some steps that we have done. They're just practical. Like I said, hopefully you didn't pay to get in, all right? So I'll have to give you a refund. But these are things that's worked in Tucson, and they've worked in South Carolina as well. But as we begin, I just want to say this. This session and my thoughts do not replace the main thing, and that is that our prayer, our preparation, our preaching, we have to understand I am not replacing those three things. Those are essential to our ministry. And so it goes without saying, these are all already in our ministry. What I want to do is give you some steps of just practical things that we've done. And so step number one is coming in and establishing a vision. You're the leader. You're the pastor. If you can't be the cheerleader for what's going on in your ministry, then there's not going to be much renewing going on. I am an optimist, even though there were some things that looked very bleak. I left a ministry that had a Christian school of 500. We had a preschool of 150. We had a growing church running over 600. We were in the Bible Belt region. And man, it was awesome what was going on in South Carolina. And there were some dark clouds over the ministry. I was coming in to replace a man who'd been there 50 years. And that was a tall order. Now, I do believe the last 10 years of Pastor Johnson's ministry, by the way, Pastor Johnson's a member of our church. He and I talk frequently. I write to him every other week, letting him know I'm praying for him. He's still alive. He's 94. And so he is a great man. But that last 10 years, it was almost like there was a man between us because the ministry had gone down so much. So I came in, and that is establishing a vision theme. Where in the world are we going to do? What are we going to do? And here's what I've learned through many years of ministry and the 14 years I spent in the business world after college is that people are just looking for leadership. People are just looking for someone to follow, but someone who believes in what they're following. And so we established a vision. We established a theme for our ministry. Where are we going? And I have established our theme each one of the last 7 years like this year, our theme is one, and it's established by quarter. And so that way, it's always every quarter you get to refresh your theme. And so our theme this year is one, one family, one church, one mission, one gospel. And so establish a theme, always repeating that theme, keeping it with banners in your auditorium, visible for everyone, knowing that we're going someplace, that our pastor has a place to go. So it starts with a theme. But this is something that I've done in two ministries and it's worked. Step number two is this. Every ministry that seems to be tailing off, who stays behind? The older people that help see the church established. The older people that they have grandchildren. And so from the pulpit, several times I've asked, will you one more time. What do I mean by that? One more time will you go on visitation? One more time will you give? One more time. And so after I've established the theme, here's where we're going. Step number two is, hey, listen, will you go one more time? Who are the people that have the money in your church? Generally speaking, the older people. If they've invested well, if we're going to... And again, this is a workshop. I'm not saying that we go after the old people because they have money. I'm saying that those are the people that they need to understand that we have a vision and we're going somewhere, but they're tired. Their church is going through. Their church is going through and watch their church decline. Dale Idris is one of the men. He's been in our church over 50 years. He was in the audit banking business, had his own CPA firm for many years. And I took him aside, someone that's been there. I took him to lunch and said, Dale, could you one more time? be involved in your church one more time. And I did that with all the different older people in our church, either one-on-one or from the pulpit. I talked to them one more time. One more time, go soul winning. One more time, help us with our visitors. One more time, come and help us in some of the other steps that I'm going to talk about. The older people, the reason they stayed in the church, because they love the church. But they're tired, they're worn out, and if there's not a vision, they're not going to go forward. So establish the vision, and then build that bridge. I was the new kid on the block. I was the young kid coming in, and here's this guy asking me to one more time. Well, after I established the vision, they were willing to go one more time. And I'll give you some examples of that in just a moment. But every ministry has something maybe I could put it this way. When I walk through the courtyard of our ministry, we have five buildings, and so we walk through the courtyard of those buildings. I'm always looking for paper or something like that to pick up, just to make sure a visitor doesn't see it. But, you know, I found myself completely ignoring the fact that maybe someone spilled what we call an EG's in Tucson. It's a local restaurant. You'd have to probably be there to understand what it is, but it's a sugar drink that's very healthy for you. So anyway, the kids will spill it. We'll do it with the bus kids or whatever, and they spill it, and then the stains get there. And I walk through the courtyard, you know, 5-6 times a day, and I don't even see those stains, but I'll see a piece of paper. But yet I'll have a visitor come in, and I'll say, hey, listen, look around, see if there's something you see. Well, what about all these spots here? They're there every day, but I don't see them. And the same thing is true of your ministry. If we were to walk in your ministry, someone else better say, well, why is there a crack in your sheetrock there? How long has it been since this has been painted? Duct tape is nice, but should your carpets be duct taped where your visitors are going to come in? Step number three is something that I think that all of us it'd be good for us to be reminded. Do something in your ministry to make it family attractive. You need your older people who have stuck with it through thick and thin. You need them to help implement your vision. You need their labor of love, their involvement. You need their finances. But we've got to reach the young families. So there has to be something attractive in there for the families. When we got there, there was nothing for children. And the very first project, our very first stewardship project, was to raise funds for a playground. Our people got behind it. And you know who gave to it? All the older people. We raised $125,000 for a playground. And we did that in short order, just over a few months, and we built a state-of-the-art playground. 6 years later, it's still the most amazing thing for families. They come early and the children play on the playground and they'll stay later, and the moms and dads will fellowship and benches that we have set up there, and the children will play. It's become an attraction for fellowship, and a new family walks through, and guess who points out to mom and dad what's on your campus? The children, the kids. And so that's helped. Throughout the ministry in our nursery, how many of you have broken toys in your nursery? Toys that, you have a baby doll that's missing one arm. You have a toy house that somebody gave to you and it was already broken when they gave it to you. That's not impressive to a new family coming in and they're dropping off their baby or their two-year-old to leave with someone that they do not know. And, oh, by the way, the nursery's fallen apart. That's not attractive to a young family. I think we must look with a fresh set of eyes to make our ministry family attractive. Here's step number four. What we've done is in odd years and even years, we have a major project. And so in odd years, we do an Easter project with door hangers. Now, I put an example of a door hanger there that we used this past year. It's very busy. We had someone who could figure all this out better than I who designed it. What we were trying to do is make someone read the front and the back, and so it was very colorful, and we just wanted somebody to if we wanted everyone to see it. Now, let me tell you, we've done this three times. I'd like to tell you what's happened three times. The first year, we're just kind of, you know, we're, I came in 2009, 2010, so 2011. So 2009, we're getting into the whole Easter project, door hanger, trying to get our people excited. And so the first year, we had 12,500 door hangers. Now, some of you maybe from Lancaster, our numbers are going to be way smaller than anything compared with Lancaster. But we had we got 12,500 door hangers. That's what we could afford. And so we had someone design them for us. That we use printplace.com. They are in they're in Texas. They gave us a great rate, printplace.com. And they, so they this is a high quality door hanger. And so what happened is, we put all of them on the communion table, and we had a huge step of faith. I'm going to tell you how big our step of faith was. We prayed for a 98% failure rate. We prayed for a 2% result on our door hangers. Literally, that's what we presented to the church. We gathered around the whole church family around the communion table, Lord's table, and we said, we're praying for a 2% result on 12,500 door hangers. So that would be how many? 250, right? So, we had, you know, several dozen people come out, and we did it from Monday through to Friday, before Easter. And we did 12,500 doors. And then Sunday came, and we're waiting, anticipation. We went through Sunday school and waiting for church to come. We had 263 first-time visitors. Amen. Prayer, we prayed over them. The Lord heard our prayer. And in 5 days, we did 12,500. And so we had 263 first-time visitors. It was the first great thing that happened in my ministry at Tucson as far as church growth. And from that, it took us months to work through all of those people. And in our church, really, we had a huge growth spurt out of that first Easter project. And so the second time we did it, we did 25,000, and we had grown. We did 25,000 in one day, and that particular year, we prayed for 50 families to visit. Now, we didn't pray for a certain number. We prayed for 50 families. We had 57 first-time visiting families that second time. Another growth spurt, another long follow-up. And then this year, we did it for the third time, and it was amazing. So I ordered 35,000. But I ordered 37,500, but I told a church I ordered 35,000 psychological, that we could do this in 5 days. And so we had people signed up. We had maps for the whole city. Everybody had maps. And we did 37,000 in 5 days this past Easter. And it was amazing what happened. We had 47 people get saved. We had 1,186 people. It's the largest attendance we've had since I've been the pastor. And we prayed. We had prayer meetings throughout the week over our door hangers. We had people take vacation during door hangers. It's becoming an event for us. And I realized that it just worked for us. I mean, you may have another idea about door hangers or how we could have done it different. I just know that we've done it three times over the last 6 years, and our church has grown immensely. And we partner with Chick-fil-A, and they gave us a huge discount, and so we gave every visitor a $5 gift card. And someone, I actually have one pastor in town, says, you're bribing people to come to church. And I said, well, pastor, I called his name. I said, you run vans on Sunday, and you use candy and things like that to get people. Well, that's different. I said, okay, well, I'd just be different. it's hard for me to, if you run a bus ministry and we run a bus ministry and we do hot dogs and clowns and balloons and everything to get kids on bus. I think Chick-fil-A is just the adult way to get people to church. So it worked. And And we had 47 people get saved, and we've grown. And now we were praying that here's was our prayer as a staff, that we could cross that 750 barrier. That means that people are getting saved, people are getting baptized, and it's not all in the numbers, but that was just a specific prayer request. We completely skipped 750 and went to 800 because of this past Easter Sunday. So the Lord blessed us in amazing ways, bigger than what we had planned. Step number five is, on even years, we do love works. We've done love works twice now. And let me tell you what happened in 2014 for love works. Now, we took an idea that we heard here at a leadership conference heard here at Lancaster Baptist, and then we made it our own. We owned it. And so we do what's called 40 Days of Love Works. We plan a Love Works Sunday. It's always the first Sunday of May. That works in our calendar. So we have Love Works Sunday, and then we back it up 40 days, and we have 40 days of Love Works. And here are the things that we do each time with Love Works on the even years. We have our specially designed logo. We have a navy blue T-shirt, lime green letters, and white logo. And so everybody sees it. You can see it from a mile away. Everybody that signs up for Love Works gets a T-shirt. And then for 40 days, we ask them to wear that every time they come out to be involved in one of the ministries. Here are the things that we do in Love Works. We do water bottles. In Tucson, there are lots of bus routes. Our city is laid out in grids, and we have a huge transportation system in Tucson, and there are just thousands and thousands of people that ride the buses. And so all the different bus stops, we had teams of four go to the different bus stops for 5 days in a row. We had our own water bottles. They were labeled with the Love Works label with our church name and website, and we did that for 5 days. There are three police stations and five fire stations that are in the vicinity. We fixed every crew breakfast from our kitchen, and we took that in a commercial setting to all the fire and police stations. We are near the border, and so there's a lot of border patrol. Border Patrol headquarters is there in Tucson, and so at the different Border Patrol crossings, everyone hates Border Patrol in Tucson. They're hated. The people know that they're hated. They go to the restaurant, they're hated. We have a large Hispanic population. They hate Border Patrol. It's just Border Patrol is, you get paid a lot of money, $75,000 to work there with the Border Patrol, but it's a hated job. They were blown away. No one had ever done anything for Border Patrol like we did. We have five Border Patrol in our church. Three of them is a direct result of Love Works. It's helped grow our church. Our Spanish pastor's here, and he even has one of the Border Patrol in Spanish church. So that's interesting. So, and I say that because now not everyone is legal in our Spanish church. So, we do have illegals, and they're just not allowed to serve in leadership positions, but we're not the law, and we just try to work and love these people. So we may have a Border Patrol agent sitting in the same row as someone who's illegal. It is very interesting. But it just blew away the Border Patrol that we would do something like that. And so we've had several Border Patrol visit our church. I had the glorious privilege, Oscar, the one I'm talking about, he brought one of his coworkers to our church. She was a Border Patrol agent, single lady, and they worked at the same station. And my wife and I sat down in my office, and we led her to the Lord. And so she's there. She's there every time the doors are open and her shift allows. And she's just growing. It's completely changed her life around, all as a result of Love Works. We have 19 schools within a 4-mile geographical area of our church. And so we have 20 schools, but we called every principal, and 19 of the schools said, well, we would love for you to come in and bring donuts to the teachers. And so we spent, as a part of our 40 Days of Love Works, we took donuts for every teacher that was there. We took them to the break room with all of the Love Works tracks that have all the information about Love Works Sunday, the gospel, and we designed all of that and just put it in the teacher workrooms. And on Love Works Sunday, I'll get to the result of Love Works Sunday, our last one, in just a moment. But we did that. We wrote, I asked for 10 people in our church that would be willing to write letters and they could use appropriate English and they could do this. We took every politician in our state and we wrote to every single politician in our state at least 10 letters, at least 10. And we gave them ideas of what to write. And then I followed that up and I handwrote a letter to every one of those inviting them to Love Works Sunday. The other people just said, were writing to thank them for their service, thank them for the public service. And it didn't matter if they were Libertarian, Democrat, Republican, Independent. It didn't matter to us. We were just thanking them for their public service. And then I followed up with a handwritten letter to each one of those politicians. And then we, the Saturday before Love Works Sunday, we had a community meal. We printed up tickets and we invited everyone that was just right there in our local community to a free meal. And so our Spanish church was involved in that. They fixed the meal. We have a Korean ministry. They helped serve. And then we still had another 100 people from the English church that jumped in there to sit at the tables with everyone that came from the community. And they kept coming and they came and they came. Free meal. They came. It was a great meal, but it really impacted our local community. And then on Love Works Sunday, which was the first Sunday of May, we asked Dr. Shetler to come over. He's just, you know, he's kind of shy and quiet. And so we asked him to come over and preach. And so he came over and preached. And something that he says never happened in his ministry, at invitation, we had 54 people walk the aisle on Love Works Sunday. We had 40 days of prayer, 40 days of work, 40 days of older people. It was amazing how our older people got involved. They were wearing their T-shirts. They were helping people. And we served a huge meal on Love Works Sunday. And some of our own people didn't even get to eat because the response was so big. We had such a huge crowd that day. Not quite the 1186 of Easter Sunday, but we had 1107 or 1106, something like that, just over 1100, and our gym only seats 800. So we had a lot of people didn't even get to eat that day, but we had 54 people walk the aisle. Now, on that Sunday, the mayor of Tucson came. He is a liberal as can be. And Tucson's a very liberal city. Most everyone is a Democrat. We only have one Republican there in the actual city proper. Everyone's a Democrat, very liberal city. But three members of city council came. That's from writing letters and making phone calls. State Senator Bradley came. And numerous other people that were staffers sent representatives that came on Love Works Sunday. And I allowed the mayor to speak. He had obviously never been in a church any time in his recent memory. Our people just squirmed as he talked. But you know what? We thanked him for being there. And here's what: love works. That's why we did it. And so since that time, I've had the opportunity to take the mayor out to eat, took him out for lunch, got to sit across the table from him and talk to him. He's as lost as can be, but I shared the gospel message with him. I'd love to tell you he got saved, but I just had the opportunity to share with him. And so he called me just recently as in the last couple of months, and asked if he come back and visit. Amen. So. You can't come back. Of course, it was awesome to have him there. His name's Mayor Rothschild, and lost as can be. But at lunch, when I was talking to him, he said, Pastor Armstrong, he said, not one church has ever invited me to come to church. He said, I'm invited to all kinds of civic meetings, school board meetings, this, that, because they all want something. He says, but you're the first church that's ever invited me. And he's a two-term mayor, and I was shocked by that because I did that in my previous ministry, but maybe that's true of your area, that you haven't reached out to your mayor or somebody like that. It works. They just want to know that we care. And so in even years, we do Love Works, and it's been phenomenally successful over the two times that we've done it. Step number six, have a work day at your church. Paint, clean up, throw away junk. I would like to tell you what I did. I called Tim Christensen, and I I said, Tim, can I fly you over for a day? You come in the morning and we'll get you out that evening. And all I want you to do is walk through our campus. I'm going to follow you with a clipboard. I want you to tell me everything that you see wrong in our ministry. He goes, well, I don't want to do that. I said, well, I'd like for you to do that. Can you ask Pastor Chapel if you can do that? And so he called me and said, well, I could come on a Thursday or something like that. And so he flew over and I followed him around our campus. We have five buildings and every building, by the third building, I said, you're right. I shouldn't have invited you. because I had lots of pages of stuff. Let me give you an example. When we walked through our lobby, when I came, our auditorium, it seated 1,200 people, and we had 277 that first Sunday, okay? So our auditorium's big. It had nothing had ever been done. The carpet has never been changed in the 38 years. The drapes that were covering the baptistry hadn't even been moved. I mean, you should have seen they collapsed when we finally took them down. They were dry rotted. We had pews that went like this because they were so old, and they had been propped up with boards. And our auditorium was really in disrepair. Whenever Pastor Johnson built the building, he never elected to paint, and so it still had the gray cinder block. We still had lights that were very dim. It was depressing walking in an auditorium. But people, guess what the older people are used to? They saw it every day, every service. But guess what a new person came in, they saw? This is depressing. Remember in 1970s, they ran 2,000 people, and the church was built with one toilet for the men and three toilets for the ladies. So it was interesting. So we started raising funds, and that is to remodel auditorium and to build a restroom facility. And we did that a year and a half ago. It cost us about $1.7 million to do it. We were able to raise $700,000 of that. And it's just been amazing. The transformation has taken place. It's two completely different places. It's amazing what paint and carpet and new seating will do for an auditorium. But as Tim walked through, we were walking through the lobby, and he says, what does that picture tell you? And I said, it's Thomas Kincaid. It's amazing. What do you mean? That's a valuable picture. He says, what do you think that visitor means to a visitor? And for the first time, I really stopped to think. I said, well, what should I put up there? He said, put pictures of people smiling, families from your church family. And it was an inexpensive way to completely dress up our lobby, our Sunday school classrooms. And we took great quality pictures of families smiling and being involved in ministry. We took them to Staples. They put them on a canvas for us. And we got rid of every Thomas Kincaid picture. They're in a closet somewhere. I'll sell them to you really cheap. They're all gone. And we've replaced them with pictures of family. Pictures tell a story. And so we got rid of all of those. This is no exaggeration. In fact, Pastor Arias is here. He can tell you this. Three dumpsters we've had brought in and throwaway junk that's accumulated over 56 years. Guys, if we want to renew and we want to attract visitors, we got to get rid of some of the junk, and we need to paint and clean up, and we need to get rid of the duct tape where financially possible to do so. Throw away junk. Get rid of the junk. We have it stuffed in our closets and in rooms that we could be using for Sunday school. And it's amazing how much junk. Three dumpsters worth that we've hauled away since I became pastor. And some of the older people, it was hard on them. But Pastor, we gave for that. I said, when was the last time you used it? But we gave for that. Would it be okay if we replaced it with something that would be better for visitors and for the church family? Okay. So they would help throw it away. So we've three dump loads. Work days. We actually had a man, his name is Bob Crouch. He was visiting our church, and he had heard about our church, and we were announcing a church work day. And I said, we had, from the pulpit, you know, we had over 250 people signed up for a church work day. And he came up to me after, he goes, I'm not coming back to this church. He said, you just lied to everybody that was there. I said, Bob, what do you mean? I said, we do. We have 250 people signed up. He says, there's no way this church is going to have 250 people there for a work day. I said, all right, Bob, before you leave and never come back, would you come Saturday? And then if I'm wrong, I'll apologize to you and I'll apologize publicly. And we had over 260 people out for a church work day. But we made it an event. We made a work day an event. We fed them breakfast. We fed them lunch. And we promised they would start at 8. We're through at 12. And that's it. And we made it a church fellowship fun event. We stopped halfway through. We had candy bars and Gatorade. And it's hot in Tucson. And so we had a great time. Made it an event. And it brought the church closer together. And you wouldn't believe what our church looks like today versus it looks like 6 years ago. It's really, it's been a step to renew excitement within the church. Here's step number 7. Embrace your local politicians. I mentioned it for Love Works, but since then that we've done other things. Senator Flake, he's a U.S. senator. We have Senator McCain and Senator Flake from Arizona. Senator Flake, I've invited him several times to church, and he personally, not one of his staffers, he personally called me and said, Pastor Armstrong, thank you for these handwritten notes that you've sent to me. He said, but I'm a Mormon, and I always go to church with my family, and so I'm not going to come to your church, but if you invite me on some Saturday, I'll be more than happy to come on some Saturday. And I said, well, we don't do church on Saturday, but we'll find something to get you down here on a Saturday. You know what? He's a Mormon. He's by his own admission. He still needs to be saved. And yet he returned my call personally, a U.S. Sitting senator, and handwritten notes work. They really do. Write your politicians. We have mayors and senators and House representatives. We have two judges as a part of our church. One judge has come there since I've been the pastor, Judge B. And I've been able to go to his courtroom, sit in his courtroom. He's introduced me to other judges. It just opens up doors. So embrace your local politicians. Doesn't mean you have to embrace their philosophy, but we need to let these politicians know that we care about them. What's happened in our country? They've legislated our Christian rights away. And so we must reach out to them so that they know and they our voice and hear our voice. Step number 8 is that website. And I am not an expert in technology, but I do know just a couple things. That statistics tell us it's the number one way people find your church. Your website needs to be relevant. And it needs to be current. If you had an event back in February, it's a good idea that it not be on your website now. Because it screams that you have a website, but it's not up to date. No one cares about it. Have a current, up-to-date website. I haven't asked Pro Church if I could do this, but we, prochurch.com, host our website. It's TucsonBaptist.com. And they do an amazing job. It's a nominal fee, we're very, very pleased with it, and we get lots of comments. And then in the backside of it, where we can put information, it's very user-friendly, and we're able to do some good things and keep it updated with relevant pictures, events, and our doctrinal statement, and service times, maps, so it's very functional. But a website is essential. We do a connection card on Sunday, like you've heard about this morning, and only we wrap our gifts. You don't have to go get it. I mean, we wrap our gifts, and they're very nice. I write inside every book a thank you to the people, and we always ask, how did you hear about the ministry? Over and over again, the website, especially for people moving into the area. And then our door knocking is another way. Of course, all of our information points people to the website in our door knocking. But website, keep it updated. Social media. We use a lot of social media. By that is I have a Twitter account. The church has a Twitter account. I mean, my Twitter is interchangeable between personal and church. I mean, Sunday, I tweeted a picture of my foot. I broke my toe, and so my foot hurts. I tweeted that on Sunday, but then I tweeted 3 or 4 other things about that was going on in church. It's just, it's again, it's if I want to attract younger people, I want I want college students and young families to come to our church. They need to know that we're out there. Instagram, always putting pictures of the ministry, always putting pictures of something going on in church. Facebook, we have a secretary does an amazing job with our Facebook. And just this past week on Facebook Manager, when you establish a page, you can be the manager of that page, and you can see all the different views and touches that it has. And just this past week, we had a post, and 3,200 and some odd people it touched, different Facebook users for a picture that was put up. Social media works. It works. And again, you want to talk about renewing a ministry and getting your name out there, and that you're relevant, and that people will hear about you, whether it's Bible verses or something great that happened on a Sunday, or something great that's planned, Vacation Bible School, Teen Camp, or whatever. Social media is great. And along with social media is the local news. It's another free way to get advertisement. We have a great relationship with KVOA. It's Channel 4. It's an NBC News affiliate. They have run stories in our church. We had a man break into our church in February. He robbed the local 7-Eleven. He came up the street. The police were coming down the street. He broke into our building. And then when he broke in, he barricaded himself into a room, set the room on fire, and broke out the back window, escaped. He also then did a home invasion. He stole a gun from Walmart, and then he was subsequently run over by a police officer. Made a lot of national news. I was on Nancy Grace as a part of all that. I was on the news and on our local affiliate. But you know what? It was the best advertisement. It cost us $65,000 damage, but it sure was a great advertisement for our church and our ministry. But I say that, we had lots of visitors as a result of it, people that felt sorry for us coming to check us out. And so it was good. But then about 2 months later, KVOA came in and they did a follow-up story, and everything's fixed, everything's repaired. Thank the Lord for insurance. We didn't have to pay our deductible. They paid the whole thing, so that part was good. But they came in and did a follow-up, and they ran it at their 6 o'clock news, their 10 o'clock news, and then their 5:30, 6, and 6:30 the next day. Six touches about our ministry. Now, you probably shouldn't set your building on fire to get that kind of coverage, but with Channel 9, KGUN 9, ABC station, we invited them to follow us when we did our Love Works. Stella is one of the anchors, and she does a piece called Stella Cares every day on the news. And so we contacted her, and we just said, hey, listen, we're going to do something that, as far as we know, it's never been done here in Tucson. We'd like to know if you have we'd like to have a news reporter follow us and do a piece. We told her what it was, what Love Works was. She said, absolutely. So they had a cameraman doing the meals at the fire station, the police station, doing the water bottles, coming to the free meal. I'm telling you, we got amazing press from that. Free. Didn't pay a penny. And so reach out to your local news. When you have something big going on, invite the local news to come in. Here's the thing that we've learned from the news station. They're always looking for news stories. Jeff Pierce has become a friend of mine. He works with KVOA. I've been witnessing to him. I've taken him to lunch, and he and his wife have visited our church. And so I've asked him a lot of questions about news and stories and the background, what we don't see up front. And so he just shared with me, we're always looking for news, but we're also looking for those human interest stories that make people feel good. And because what's the first 8 minutes of the news?
Bad.
It's all bad. But it's the older people who stay and watch the entire newscast. And so they have to look for some, he said that's why there's always this human interest stories on dogs or cats that are rescued, because they make the older people feel warm and fuzzy. So I said, well, we're going to make the older people feel warm and fuzzy by some things we're doing in our church. And we want to be on there. And so it's worked. Embrace that avenue there. If you're an established church, looking for other people to hear about your church. Step number 10 is we have what we call a SALT ministry, and it's senior adults laboring together. And we do this every month. My wife and two other ladies, we cook a meal for all of our adults. They're invited to church this past Monday, a week ago. We had 123 adults come. They have to be 55 years of age and older. That tells you we've got an older church. And then we rotate that. So we'll have a serious one in January. We'll have a funny one. The teenagers will come in and do skits on one. We'll bring in a local politician to talk about Medicaid, Medicare. So it's not always the same. Every month we rotate a different theme to reach and touch those senior adults to make sure they're not forgotten. All of our monies are going really into soul winning, reaching our community, love works, all of these things that are not going for the senior adults, but it's the senior adults that are giving much of the funds necessary for us to do our love works and our outreach ministries. So once a month, it's our way of giving back to them to touch their lives. And it started out with 60. Like I said, we had 123 just a week ago. And so it's really, really helped out. Just a couple other things that we have done, but those are the 10 most important steps that we've done to renew our established church. We have what we call the Red Chariot Ministry. We purchased a golf cart. It's red. We're in Tucson, where the University of Arizona is. Everything is red, so we call it the Red Chariot Ministry. And we pick up the senior adults in the parking lot and take them to the front door of the church. And we haven't gotten any like press about that, but that's really helped us within our church. We also have a Gatekeepers Ministry, and that's just our security, where we have it's an outlet for lots of guys to get involved. And of course, we can carry guns in Arizona and things like that, so it's good. We have a great missions conference every October, and we get the whole church involved with that, revival every spring. But those are things that you should already be doing. But these are just some steps that we have done to try to see our church grow, and it's worked. We continue to grow, and the Lord continues to bless. And we have a Spanish ministry, we have an African ministry, we have a big refugee population in Tucson, so we have an African ministry, and then our English ministry, we have bus ministries. So we have many of the same ministries that you may have, but perhaps we just do a few things differently.